Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to the very first episode of the show. So excited to have you here. I'm your host, Jason Ogle, and I can't wait to begin sharing the great content and conversations I've been capturing with today's leading UX design superheroes, as I fondly refer to them. The beauty of this superhero concept is that we can all be one if we are hungry enough and work hard enough for it. I really appreciate your interest in this show and for the opportunity to serve you in your UX design journey. So without further ado, let's jump right into it. Daniel Hooper is a former Apple engineer and creator of the exciting new prototyping software application Principal. He designed and engineered a super innovative iPad keyboard editing concept, and that YouTube video is approaching a million views. He's also created some really interesting game concepts like Percepto for iOS. Welcome, Daniel. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much. You've done your homework.
I have, and it's amazing what you're working on right now. Definitely a big fan of prototyping, and I don't believe there's any better way to show your design to someone and to get validation on it and actually to test your design as well. So super excited about that product.
Thanks. I agree. I think just the ability to try out your ideas without having to invest a lot of time is really valuable and helps creativity a lot.
Absolutely. So the theme of this podcast, we're taking kind of a fun approach with the superhero thing. And, you know, it's really true in a lot of ways. Superheroes do great things, and you are doing great things out there in the UX world. And I believe you have a lot of great value to share with aspiring UX designers who are trying to get, you know, much further in their career right now. And so I want to talk about, you know, every superhero has a secret identity. And, you know, in our field, you know, we know a lot of work that we all do, but I don't think we really know a lot about who people are and, you know, kind of what their lives are like, because we all have quote unquote normal lives, you know, outside of our work. So that's sort of the idea of this first segment. I wanted to just kind of dive in, talk about yours. And so I'd like to start out by just you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life.
Sure. Well, I'll say first off, I wish I had a secret life outside of my work right now. It's, been pretty all-encompassing, but it's good. I mean, I love what I do. As far as my personal life, you interested in hearing about my background, or?
Yeah, just, you know, what's your life like, you know, outside of your work? You know, I know it's encompassing right now, but, you know, family, you know, what do you like to do, you know, when you're not working?
Yeah, well, I have a lot of varied interests. I like to say that I collect hobbies. So I play guitar and into longboarding. I don't know if you ever heard about slacklining. It's kind of like tightrope walking, but you can set it up between two trees in the park. And now that it's starting to be fall weather in Atlanta, I've been doing that with some friends.
Nice.
So I try to have a pretty clean separation between work and my outside life, because it's... you know, with the internet and all, it's easy to be just constantly bombarded by people, especially with other time zones and all that. So lately I've been trying to just trying to disconnect, you know, completely turn off my phone and just really be with the people that I'm spending time with.
I love it. Yes, I have seen pictures of slacklining. I didn't know that's what it was called, but I've seen some on my Instagram feed occasionally, and it looks very fascinating. Looks very interesting.
Yeah, you should give it a try. It's most people are a little worried about it, but once they stand on it the first time, they're hooked.
That's great, man. So tell us your starting out story. What inspired you to pursue UX design as a career?
You know, it wasn't really a choice. I don't feel like there was a moment where I decided this is what I want to do. It was very organic. I initially got into programming because of Lego Mindstorms, which was Lego's kind of robotics kit. Huh. And so from there, you know, I started making video games, and then slowly that started becoming other types of applications. And so it was a very kind of gradual transition from, you know, Legos to programming to, you know, standard software. And then you kind of just naturally have to pick up, you know, design and things like that if you want to do good work. So, you know, I love learning new things. So I love that with software and, you know, video games and all of that, it requires a lot of different types of skill sets in order to create good work. You know, everything from visual design to an understanding of psychology and animation, and then just the whole engineering side of it, this has always fascinated me.
I love it. It's amazing too. You mentioned Legos. There's a big movement of, you know, for kids, you know, about making, you know, robotic Legos and things like that, which is really cool to see that kind of movement getting into our youth, you know, giving them some really, you know, good, clean and really productive fun. That's actually career setting up for them as well.
Definitely. And I think a lot of times with school, most students' encounters with math and engineering is very sterile and hard to relate to their everyday life. Mm. And so, you know, things like Mindstorms, or if kids started using like Arduino or something like that, it suddenly makes it a lot more interesting and approachable. And, you know, that's something I'm excited to see continue.
Awesome. If you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
That's a tough one. you know, I really can't imagine doing anything else.
Love it.
For a while, I, at least in high school, I thought I wanted to be a musician, but I think everyone has a period in which they think that.
Yep. Me too.
But, you know, that was never a serious thing. I think I kind of just grew out of that and realized that my true interests were in the engineering and design world.
Awesome. So who has been your biggest inspiration in your work and why?
This one is an easier question for me because I've learned a lot from Brett Victor. He is a unique designer in that he has a strong background in engineering as well as design, which is something I haven't found a whole lot. And he's also great because he pulls a lot of his work from designers and engineers in the past. So if you watch any of his talks, a lot of the things that he references are ideas that have been around from, you know, the 1970s, perhaps. And, you know, a lot of designers are totally unaware of that period. And it's very cool to see how he kind of makes old ideas relevant today. And a lot of the stuff from back then is still revolutionary by today's standards. It's just we've forgotten about most of it. If you haven't already, you should definitely go to his website. It's worrydream.com. He has tons of great talks. And my favorite section is he lists a bunch of books that he loves. And I've read many of them. Oh, nice. And they're all great.
Very cool. Yeah, I've heard of Brett. I haven't actually had the privilege of diving into his work. But, you know, I've seen his name around and I've heard like more than one person, probably two or three people say, you've got to see this video. And it's something about motion in design or something. And I haven't seen it yet, but it's in my queue. So now I'm definitely going to see it.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of it. But I'm sure people will find it when they do a Google. So this isn't really one of my questions I was going to ask, but I feel like I want to ask you, you know, you are an Apple engineer. One does not simply leave Apple.
Yeah, you have to slip away in the night.
Can you tell us real quick about that?
Yeah, I worked at Apple for about 2 years on all of their photography apps, mainly the engineering side, though a lot of that was working very closely with the designers. I spent a lot of time creating the UI part of the apps. So I kind of jumped around a good bit. I worked on the camera app and the photos app on the iPhone. And I also worked on iPhoto for iOS and wow, Photos for Mac finally before leaving. So it was interesting to work on, you know, all of the different photography creative tools at Apple. You know, much like Principle, their photography apps is enabling people to be creative. And that's something that I have always loved working on.
I love it. I love your passion, man. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
That's an interesting question. I don't feel like I'm particularly disciplined, but maybe from the outside, it seems like I am. I think one thing that I really try to do is take kind of an engineering approach to problems. So if something comes up, if I encounter some kind of problem, I will try to learn just about as much as I can about it. And I feel like once you do that, if you fully understand the problem, the solution will be obvious to you. And if the solution is not obvious, you don't know enough about the problem.
Mm.
And so, you know, I take that approach with the solving. And then once I have solved it, I'll usually take steps to make sure that that problem never happens again. So that happens a lot with like bugs and software. If I encounter a bug, I'll fix it, and then I'll go and make sure that that bug can never happen again in another form, perhaps. So that approach works for engineering, but I think the design side as well, doing things like user studies really helps you understand how people think about and use what you're designing. And if you're not watching someone else using your software, you're really just guessing. And it's completely surprising every time I watch someone use the software. I learn something every time. And that's just incredibly valuable.
Absolutely. That is great. Great feedback. As you know what happens when we assume, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
So I think I know the answer to this, but can you tell us about the one thing you're working on that you're most excited about?
Yeah, I get questions like that a lot, and I kind of take the Apple approach in that I don't talk about future plans, but I will say that there's a lot of great stuff that is in store for Principal, and I think you'll really like where it's headed.
Awesome. So let's get into your transformation. You know, every superhero goes through a transformation where they realize their potential. They realize what they can actually accomplish with the powers they have. And so I want to ask you, what's your design superpower?
My design superpower. You know, I think with that, people on the outside may know better than me. I feel like I still have so much to learn. You know, I'm learning new things every day. So my strengths and weaknesses may be more apparent to a third party from the outside, just looking at my work. But you know, if I had to say something, maybe just the integration of both the design and engineering, because I have training in both, I'm able to solve problems that, you know, simultaneously solve the design and the engineering problems. And especially in larger groups or teams where it's divided, you know, engineering design right down the middle, it can be difficult to solve problems that way. And so that's something that I really enjoy being able to think about both the design and the engineering at the same time and solve them simultaneously.
That truly a unique skill set. Folks, you think that unicorns don't exist, but you just met one. I have a lot of respect for you and a lot of respect for anybody who has really become, you know, a master at both. It's very rare. So it's a pleasure to have you talk about that.
Yeah, I wish more people would take the time to learn both. I don't think that's an impossible task. You know, really the idea of having someone be just a designer or just an engineer is really sort of a modern idea that's come out of designing really large projects. You know, it's just unreasonable to have one person do all of that. If you think back to kind of the origins of software, most of the people making software were the designer and the engineer. And so it's just kind of a natural thing. And so I'm sort of sad that we've lost that. The artificial divide between design and engineering is, you know, kind of created its own problems on teams now.
That is, there's a lot of truth to that. And I think that is one of the big sort of dilemmas maybe in our work, you know, is I think a lot of designers want to be better at code. And I think even a lot of developers would like to be a little better at design. So I think that that's why it's so unique to find someone who's actually been able to really harness both of those disciplines. And so mm-hmm. you're saying there is hope.
Definitely. I
you're an example. So what's your design kryptonite?
My design kryptonite? Maybe my perfectionism. That's kind of a classic interview response, I guess, but sometimes I will wait a long time to approach a problem until I'm really happy with the solution. So maybe from a product standpoint, that means people have to wait a little bit longer to get what they need. But you know, from my perspective, I think if you add something before it's really ready, it creates a lot of problems for you down the road in that you have to keep supporting it and you have to make some kind of way to transfer from the old method to the new method. And I'd rather just wait and get it right, you know, so people are happy right off the bat. You know, so
yeah,
those are some of the things I think about when trying to approach a new feature.
It's always the juggling act, isn't it? Because you know, we want to ship it, you know, and we're supposed to, right? We're supposed to ship it and then fix it. But I'm with you, man. I feel like, you know, there's a certain place that you have to kind of at least get to before you ship, before you know, because otherwise, you know, you're putting something out there somebody may never come back to, as well.
Yeah,
because definitely. Oh, I'll fix it later. Well, you know what? Those people that actually just experienced that may not come back. Because it wasn't, you know, at least tuned up enough. So I always struggle with that myself, you know, it's just that balance. So I appreciate your honesty on that. So, this is kind of a fun one. What would your UX design superhero name be?
My superhero name be? gosh, maybe something to do with the fact that I have a background in both engineering and design. I wouldn't say unicorn because that doesn't sound cool, but
doesn't sound tough enough.
No, not at all. Maybe something along those lines.
Multi-man?
Sure, multi-man.
Does that work?
We'll revisit that.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Tell us a story. You know, this is the area where we talk about, you know, failures, and I mean, failure is kind of like it can feel like our worst enemy, but in many ways it's our best friend because it helps define who we are and what we're able to grow through. So could you tell us a story about what's been your biggest failure?
Let's see. What do I want to dig up? My biggest failure. Recent memory. Principle has this feature called drivers, which lets you sort of use the idea of an animation timeline to move layers around. But instead of time, it uses the values of other layers to kind of control everything. And that was a feature that I added fairly late in the design cycle, you know, maybe just a month or two before Principle shipped. And I kind of considered it a power user feature, and so it didn't spend a whole lot of time getting it perfect. And this is one instance where I kind of got something out there before it was perfect. And I think I underestimated how much designers wanted to do highly interactive things, which is something that drivers enabled. And so, you know, with early beta testers and then some people in the early release, I was overwhelmed with how many people wanted to use that. And, you know, it was a good thing in that it reinforced the value of the feature. But on the other hand, I was kind of scrambling to try to get it up to a level of quality that I wanted all these people to be using it. You know, I guess I wish I had spent more time in user testing with that one feature. I guess I had just anticipated that a very few number of people would kind of seek it out, but I'm now realizing it's like one of the defining features of Principle that kind of sets it apart in many people's minds.
Nice. That's great, man. That's definitely, I appreciate you sharing that. It's not easy to talk about, you know, areas where we've fallen short, but you know, there's a lot that, you know, we can all learn from that and from stories like that. And, you know, and speaking of that, what do you want our listeners to take away from that story?
I guess it would be just do a lot of user studies before you ship your software or any of your designs. Because you really can't anticipate what people are going to do before you actually see real people use it.
Love it. So speaking of user testing, this is a great segue. Do you have any stories of anything really crazy or really super awkward that happened during user testing?
No really crazy things happened, but I will say that I think by its very nature, user studies are sort of always awkward.
Yes.
You know, I consider design to really be a communication skill. You're trying to say a lot of things to your users without having to spell it out for them or have them read, you know, a help document or a tutorial. And so just by doing user studies, you're asking people to do these things in a design that's not complete and it hasn't been refined. And so there is this really awkward kind of disconnect where you're asking them to do something and the software is saying one thing and it's, you know, maybe leading them astray or, you know, it's not being clear enough. And so there's definitely this tension in any user study in which, you know, the person that is using the software feels awkward because they feel like they're, you know, not doing something right, or right. I feel bad because they find a bug or they get confused. And then I just want to reach over and grab the keyboard and show them how it's done.
right.
And so it's just kind of a very tense experience for everyone involved. You know, maybe I'm doing user studies wrong, but that's my experience with them.
Well, I don't know. The software is amazing. So I think you're doing it right. But I understand the tension and the awkwardness that definitely occurs. And it's so hard to just refrain, you know, it's so hard to leave that space and that awkward silence, isn't it?
Yeah. And that awkwardness is really what you're after. Cause
right.
I almost hate to have a good user study, good in that, you know, everything goes as planned, because that means I didn't learn anything from it. So if a user study was really awkward or, you know, they hit a lot of problems, you know, that means the user study was a success. I learned a lot and it gives me a lot of things to do. Whereas if, you know, they just were amazing with the software, I kind of leave and I say, well, it's good that it worked out so well, but there's nothing on my to-do list now. You know, how do I move forward?
Right. Absolutely. So one of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, I fight for the users. How do you fight for your users?
Well, there's a really recent case of this with Principle's iOS app. I don't know if you heard about the the story there, but no. I submitted the Principle iOS app 2 weeks before I wanted to release the desktop app publicly. You know, I figured app review times is about a week. If I submit it 2 weeks before, I should be totally safe. It'll be ready for the launch. And that was not the case at all, unfortunately. I ran into so many problems. They rejected the app because they didn't understand its use case. So they asked me to upload a video of it being used. I did that, and then they rejected it because they said, this is not a useful app. You know, try adding some more functionality to it and, you know, get back to us. So I submitted another appeal and said, hey, there's tons of iOS apps that do the same functionality, and they're already on the store.
Right.
And so they backtracked then after that. And, you know, this whole time, you know, by this time I've released the desktop app. and everyone's really enjoying it, and they're saying, hey, where, how do we view our designs on the device?
No.
And they're like getting mad at me, and I'm like frustrated because I'm like, I have it. It's already done. I'm just waiting on the App Store to approve it. And so the App Store just kept coming back with these like, oh, if you, you know, take out this, or you make it so you can't share files to it, then we'll approve it. Because, you know, there was a misunderstanding with how the app was working technically. And I could have gotten it approved sooner if I had just removed that functionality. But it was something that was going to be really important for designers to be able to share their designs and let other people view it without being connected to the Mac. You know, right. If you want to send your design to a client, the client wants to just open it on their phone and view it. And that was the functionality that the store wanted me to remove in order to be approved. And so all said, I fought for that for 4 weeks. It took 4 weeks to get the iOS app onto the store.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I had tons of phone calls with the app review team and a lot of misunderstandings there. But finally, you know, got it on the store without having to make any changes to it. So that was one case in which I was literally fighting for my users,
wow.
Because I knew how important those features would be to them.
That's a great story. So when I hear, I have a conspiracy theory about this.
Okay. Let's
just
hear
came
it.
Up with it. I think that Apple's bitter that you left and they'd prolong the process. No, I'm kidding.
But you're not the first person to say that.
So how do you measure success? I know you talked about user testing, you know, but are there any other things that you do to really measure the success of your work?
I don't have a formal measure. You know, I don't quantify it. But, you know, I feel like I've done my job when people are able to use Principle to make, you know, just crazy ideas that they never could have done before. And, you know, whether they realize that's a good, crazy idea, or they say, oh, well, I tried it, it didn't really work out, you know, at least then they know and they can move on to the next thing. And so it's really exciting to me to see designers just kind of trying really crazy things and letting that inform their work. Whereas before, they would have to just stick with a safe idea that they knew their developers could make, or they knew that was a good idea. So yeah, that's success for me is when people are able to do really great work as a result of using Principle.
Love it. A lot of innovation went into this app too, and I really applaud you. And
thank you.
Not just doing what somebody else is doing and, you know, finding ways that just make sense for the user. So I applaud you on that.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Absolutely. So this one's kind of interesting too. This will wrap up this segment two of transformation is, what does the future of UX look like to you?
The future of UX, that's a big question.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier with kind of the divide between engineers and designers as a result of teams growing. You know, if anything, designers have been kind of bullied recently. You know, they want to try something and they say, how do I try this? And people are like, you should learn to code. You know, designers should learn to code. And then there's, you know, these designers that are really more creatives at heart, and they're not interested in all the technicalities of computers and all that. And so they're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And you know, with the emergence of all these new prototyping tools, that's starting to get better. But I think it's going to go further than just, you know, proof of concept ideas, because, you know, prototyping right now is sort of an add-on to some design teams. They're like, if we have time, you know, maybe we'll let our designers do this. And over time, I think the word prototyping is going to kind of hopefully fall out of use, and what we think of as prototyping today will just be a normal part of design in the future. You know, and maybe it'll even go so far as designers are able to create things that will directly go into the app in the future. And, you know, the lines between designer and developer will start to blur, which is what really excites me.
Mm. Love that answer. Let's wrap the show up with superpowers. What's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Well, I mentioned Brett Victor's website. He's got a ton of great resources on there. Basically any book that he lists, is well worth a read. And just in general, I like reading books and reading, research papers is a superpower in itself. Like being able to absorb someone's kind of lifetime knowledge of a topic from a book is amazing. And it's something that I don't get the sense most people in our industry take advantage of. You know, Alan Kay says that software is a pop culture and that we have all these trends and, you know, there's always new things going on, but we've forgotten about our past and we're not really learning from it. We're just kind of arbitrarily changing things. And so I would really like to see more designers and engineers really learning about the past and, you know, a lot of really amazing things have been done in the past that we haven't really learned from yet. And I'd like it if the industry matured beyond that.
Mm, so good. If you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
The book I would recommend is called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. It's a book by Alan Cooper. Have you heard of it?
I've heard of this book.
Well, it's a great read. It was written a while ago. I'm not sure exactly what year, but maybe it's just because my copy is really torn up. It looks like it's older than it is. Looks like it was published in 2004, but it's just as relevant today as it was when it was written.
Wow.
It kind of talks about the problem with the way that we do software and design. It talks about that engineering design divide and kind of some steps with how to improve that divide. And yeah, it's very relevant for right now. It's a great book.
Mm. I'm going to have to put that one in the queue.
Definitely, yeah.
What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
I would recommend, really just reading a lot. There's a lot of trends going on today. And a lot of them I wouldn't recommend, you know, like an easy example is the hamburger menu. It's really just kind of became the junk drawer of apps. I think there's this tendency if there's students in design school, you know, they see all these big name apps and doing things like the hamburger menu or, you know, whatever the next thing is. And they think, you know, I'm learning about these new approaches from these big apps, you know, this must be a good thing. And so I'd say you need to kind of balance the modern trends with an understanding of kind of first principles, you know, psychology, animation, things that aren't going to change with trends so that you can kind of measure current trends against these root truths that you know aren't going to change over time.
Wow. Awesome, man. As we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Sure. Right now, that's really Twitter. My Twitter handle is Daniel C. Hooper. And or you can follow Principal at Principal App. And we're chugging along. There's a lot of cool stuff coming. So if you follow us, that's the best way to keep up with all that.
Folks, you heard him. You got to keep up with him and what he's doing out there. And he is doing some amazing work and really fighting not just for the user, but for us designers, you know? So definitely keep up with Daniel. Daniel, thank you so much for being here today. It has been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Some really great content in this show. So I really appreciate it. And fight on, my friend. We'll be right back. love that interview with Daniel Hooper, and I really appreciate his unique perspective on drawing influence and inspiration from the software superheroes of old. If you enjoyed this episode, could you do me a huge favor and leave a rating and review on iTunes? It helps so much in getting the show in front of more defenders like you. Also, love to connect with you and hear your input and suggestions on the Twitters at UserDefenders. Website is userdefenders.com. Thanks so much for listening. There should be a couple more great interviews already available at the time you're listening to this, because I wanted to launch with at least three and get you hooked. Be sure to check those out as well. Until next week, fight on, my friends.